back themselves after our guys put a beat down on them earlier this year in Golden State.
DeRozan right to the hole. He ties the game at 98. DeMar's got 20 to lead the way for the Spurs.
Gotta make him make that chop at the outside.
DeRozan pulls up at the elbow. Got it! Timeout! Golden State Spurs lead by two. Inbound to Green. Going quickly, skips it in the corner. Robinson nearly lost it. Pulls away from Aldridge.
Welcome to Views from the Clutch. I go by the name of Smart Alex. I'm here with my brother from another.
C. Graham, what's good?
And we are back with an off-season edition of Views from the Clutch. As always, we'd like to take this moment out to say thank you to our supporters, listeners, and subscribers. If you'd like to join us, you could do so by following us on any of the podcasting platforms we are hosted on. You could reach us directly at viewsfromtheclutch@gmail.com. Find us on social media at Views from the Clutch on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. Wow, man. It's been a while. I think we congratulated the champs, right? That was the last thing we did. Congratulate the champs.
Oh, congratulations to Golden State. I think I know when we get last time we was on the air was the night of game six, I think, or the day before game six.
Yeah, shout out to our brother Elijah who came through and guested for that episode. It was a great episode. I enjoyed that conversation a lot. A lot of what we said actually came to fruition too, you know?
Facts.
Steph was able to close it out. He was able to have a great game to remove the possibility of him being, you know, shafted out of the finals MVP award. So he went on to win that. Andrew Wiggins had an average game, which, you know, he was bound to level back down to earth. But it did result in Golden State completing the objective. And what is that, their fourth title?
Fourth title, yeah.
It's six appearances?
Six or eight? They lost. But it was their fourth title in 8 years. That's where I got the eight from.
Say again, I didn't hear
you. Yeah, I said, no. It was their fourth title in 8 years. That's where I got the eight from.
Oh, yeah, four titles, 8 years, six finals.
But, six finals trips, which, again, the one against the Raptors could have been it might have been different had those guys get injured in the last few games.
Yeah, we had the injury timeout versus the Raptors, and then we had the epic collapse versus the LeBron-led Cavaliers in the 73-9 season. Which, I mean, at the end of the day, listen, you win four titles in 6 years in any sport. That's almost close. I think the Spurs might have done something similar to that in one of their run. It may have taken them longer to get the four titles because remember, they never won a back to back.
Facts.
So it may have taken them longer to actually get it because Tim retired with four titles, did he not?
No, he had five.
He had five? Okay, so he got his first when he carried David Robinson after the. Then they got the lock, or was that the lockout ring?
That was the lockout. I thought he won the lockout ring in 99, I think it was.
Yeah.
And then he won again in 2001, I believe.
Yeah.
That's when Steven Jackson. Yeah. And then I think it was 03 and the one with Kawhi was 2014 when they beat Miami?
Mm-hmm. And that was the last of Tim Duncan as a NBA title winner. Point being, you take four titles in that short of a period in any sport and the idea of dynasty or whatever form you want to give for a great team run, the Golden State Warriors check off all the boxes. With so little time and so much to cover, let's just quickly tell me what's pressing on your mind as far as the NBA goes. What have you been chomping at the bit to speak to the people about and tell them your feelings or get feelings and feedback on?
Well, I will say that the NBA has done a job on free agency, which started on, June 29th? June 30th. There was a lot of re-signings No signing actually made me really surprised or shocked, like real big movements. There were some trades that I was shocked, and I think I was more shocked on these trades than the actual free agent signings. Like, let's take, for instance, Jalen Brunson going to the Knicks. That was, I don't think most people felt that was going to happen. He's either going to stay or he was going to go to the Knicks. And then a lot of the other free agent signings.
Did you just brush over Jalen Brunson going to the Knicks?
No. What I'm saying is, I'm going to go back. We're going to go back to that.
Okay.
We're going to go back to that. No, that's definitely going to be a part of the conversation.
Yeah, that's going to be the last half of the podcast.
But what I mean is the fact that there were these free agent signings and there was no real movement for a free agent actually signing somewhere. And I think he was the only one that was a top tier free agent in this particular offseason who actually switched destinations, because Zach LaVine re-upped. James Harden is potentially going to re-up with Philly. He hasn't signed yet. But there hasn't been a lot of guys signed their extensions, and that's a whole nother conversation, where they signed a super max. Bradley Beal signed a super duper max to stay in D.C.
Pretty much so, everyone who was eligible to sign a supermax got a supermax except for Kyrie.
Yeah.
If we're just going to be technical and literal, we can go through LaVine got 213 mil.
Mm-hmm.
Bradley Beal got 251 mil. Jokic got his
260. I think it was 265 or something like that.
I think. Was Luka eligible for his? Or
no, Luka signed his last year. He had got like 200 plus.
Yeah. So as far as major,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Most of the major guys, pretty much all of them stayed home.
Mm-hmm.
Stay with their main franchise, with the franchise that they were originally with prior to entering free agency, which is reflective of the model that the owners and the collective bargaining agreement created to keep players in the same city. It works, but the cost is heavy, because now we're looking at the front end. Almost all of those contracts that we looked at now are at that same level they were right when guys like John Wall and Russell Westbrook and Chris Paul started to taper off. Now, Chris Paul is the least of those guys, because his decline is really, really difficult to like point to, because his teams keep winning and he keeps producing.
Yeah.
But his ability or his actual, athleticism, we know that's declining with age. But what we saw happen to John Wall is he entered into his Supermax deal and he proceeded to unfortunately get hurt. And he only played a season into his Supermax?
Mm-hmm.
A season?
I don't think it was half a season.
Right. So he got very little. So basically Washington didn't get much bang for their buck in the contract that they signed him to, and Houston didn't either. We'll get to John Wall's situation in a moment. Touching on another Supermax where things didn't play out the way they did with Russell Westbrook, he just opted into his $47.1 million option, which is the final season in the Supermax that he signed after becoming MVP for Oklahoma City. Since becoming league MVP for Oklahoma City, he's played for is it three or four franchises?
So the Rockets, the Wizards.
Thunder, Rockets, Wizards, Lakers. Yeah, so he's played for three franchises over the length of that contract, four in total. He signed it with the Thunder, began the extension with the Thunder, then was traded to the Rockets, and then from the Rockets to the Wizards, Wizards to the Lakers. So, you fans out there of teams or with a team that has signed one of these guys to one of these big mega deals where you're looking at 200 plus million, stop the press. Nikola Jokic, the two-time league MVP, is now the owner of the biggest contract in NBA history.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mind you, adjusting for inflation or whatever you want to call it, as far as the nature of contracts becoming bigger and bigger in value over the years, he's still numerically He's making more money in that deal. Everybody says, oh, LeBron won't get caught. LeBron's going to get caught. LeBron's going to get caught in NBA total career earnings. Maybe not in career earnings, he may not get caught. And even then, I still think that's possible to get caught because the nature of how the world economy is going, we're only inflating more and more and more. So it's only going to take, they're going to have to print more money for it to be, you know? To have
well, yeah, and also power. Those TV deals are going to become, if the NBA continues to maximize their exposure, those TV deals will increase. And that's where a lot of the money is being generated to push the salary caps up to a higher number. So when you get those TV contracts kick in, and they're able to raise the actual, you know, salary caps. So now those players become eligible to get paid more.
Because the distribution amount across the cap increases. Mm-hmm. My only thing is, at the rate that the NBA is currently progressing with the way the TV ratings have kind of leveled off, I see their next negotiating deal for a TV deal, if things don't dramatically change, I'm pretty sure those numbers aren't going to push very far. They may wind up getting a deal close to what they last got, which will probably be the first in our lifetime, because the NBA has consistently been a profit model for sports since David Stern took over.
Fact.
Now, mind you, obviously the economics and the world climate has changed since, you know, David Stern has left. I don't put any blame on Adam Silver for the pandemic or any of these other world issues that have affected globally how we interact with one another, but it definitely has caused basketball and a lot of other sports to take a hit as far as how people are consuming the product. At the same time, the number one sponsor of the NBA Finals, YouTube TV.
Yeah.
So the NBA continues to court people who want to be affiliated with their product. So when the time comes, they'll get paid. It just may not be what we're used to seeing, because I think the last deal was like a $3 billion, something ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back to, yeah.
Well, then also you have to look at, too, the NBA is going to have to figure out how to, you know, live post LeBron James, because LeBron James is still one of the, you know, top players, especially in the marketability. And, you know, there's always a story going on with LeBron. He's mm-hmm. pretty much talked about every day in a 24-hour news cycle. So mm-hmm. once they have to start generating stars that can make viewers I'm just saying they need in that amount of time, they need to start generating these players that the non-basketball fans are going to pay attention, or the casuals are going to pay attention to, and they're going to continue to buy and support.
I think the NBA is starting to do that with the investment in, and it's a clear investment in the European player model. So you take Nikola Jokic, who by his own merit, because he is a worthwhile MVP, two-time, he's now a fixture as the largest contract in the NBA. You've got the rising face of the NBA, a fellow European in Luka Doncic. So now you're courting the world audience with those two players alone. So I think what the NBA is going to do is going to go on multiple fronts. I don't think they're going to ever go back unless they're compelled to, because a player makes himself that, to having a face. That face era is something that the NBA has kind of long wanted to get away from. They tried it before with the whole Michael Jordan retiring thing and seeing if they could become a league of stars and not necessarily have to have one be, you know, the ring above all. And it didn't work because people were just used to what they used to. Jordan came back. He, you know, restored order. And then they started doing the whole heir apparent thing with Kobe and LeBron. I think the way that LeBron has played the game and the fact that he never had an era of title dominance that these other guys had, it's going to allow for the NBA to push for multiple stars and multiple facets and multiple regions of the world to all be one collective party that makes everybody want to come to the table. I don't know if that'll work, because, you know, to be honest with you, in other sports, I'm not familiar with who. I mean, when you talk football, you talk Tom Brady, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not to say it starts and ends with him. There are a lot of great NFL players. I don't want to even pretend like I'm marginalizing any of the great talent out there. And Tom Brady didn't even win the Super Bowl last year. But the whole point is he's kind of the face. LeBron kind of owns that same title in basketball.
Mm-hmm. But it's different with the NFL because, again, you have these guys covered by helmets and pads mm-hmm. where the NBA has the visual aspect because they have you from to actually physically being able to see the players to also to the shoes they wear. The NFL doesn't have that. Now, the NFL obviously has a total dominance as the number one sport, and that's not going to change because you could just look at the arenas. You know, some arenas hold 100,000 people, mm-hmm. you know, where the NBA arena, if you can get one to hold, you know, 25 or, you know, or 30, that's phenomenal to have that. So you're already looking at it differently from that but aspect. But again, faces of the league, the NFL will continue to go because the NFL likes to put the shield or the logo in front of mm-hmm. the individual, where the NBA is like, hey, we don't mind having the individual help promote the logo. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like the other way around.
And if anything, the logo is an individual. So it kind of, their marketing model is, it's kind of built in. I agree with you, but I can see the NBA rolling out that logo and flashing those 9 guys across the screen.
Yeah, easily.
And they'll be from shortest guy to tallest guy. On the farthest, you'll see Embiid. Because Embiid is what, 7'2", 7'1"? Mm-hmm. He's taller than mm-hmm. Jokic, and then right next to him is Jokic. And then all the way on the far left is Trae Young. Mm-hmm. And then you got all these other talents in between. You got your John Morant. You got the old guard and Steph Curry. You've got Kevin Durant. You've got a nice palette of people to continue to say, hey, this guy may not be here. But in 4 years, I don't know what we're going to be looking at. So let's just go ahead and jump to it. Hello, Brooklyn. How you doing? It's your boy, Smart Alex. A few years ago, y'all had a burgeoning franchise with a brilliant young coach. Y'all had a talent who had been ostracized by his fellow players and was forced to come to the total opposite coast to rebuild himself, not only as a player, but as a person.
But he also did that to himself.
Correct. He definitely shot himself in the face. And you had a cache of young assets and draft picks that were developing right in front of our eyes, and you were a playoff team. You had Jared Allen. You had Caris LeVert before health took him to where it did. You had veteran leadership in guys like Jared Dudley. You were building something. And you had the borough of Brooklyn behind it, excited. Brooklyn Nets fans were ready to talk that talk to Knicks fans. And it wasn't about our franchise being better than you. It was, we're hotter than y'all right now.
It was also, they were trying to say that people were trying to debate, was it going to be a Nets or a Knicks town?
Correct. And they were debating what? Which team would it be better for your favorite player to go play for? Would your player be more likely to sign with the Knicks, or would your favorite player be more likely to sign with the Nets? Mm-hmm. And now, when all that was happening, you and I think we were just starting the pod, getting our feet wet. And what did we say? Yo, Brooklyn, be careful.
Yeah.
Brooklyn, be careful. Y'all got a great thing going. Don't throw it in the ocean just because a couple of names want to come there. Don't do it, because if things don't go right, y'all going to wind up having running the tape back and doing it all over again. Look at where we at, man. I don't want to say I told you so, so I'm going to say we told you so. Is that fair?
And also keep in mind that this big, these two players, Kyrie and Kevin Durant, coming together happened June 30th, 2019, and KD requested a trade on June 30th, 2022. So it was crazy how it was exactly to the day that report was released to let people know this has been exactly 3 years. They had one playoff victory.
I think he played a total of 90 games.
Yeah.
because the first season, obviously, he could not play due to coming back from the Achilles. And even after the bubble, he still chose not to partake in the bubble. Both him and Kyrie didn't. And I have no criticism for them in that regard. None. I don't even have criticism for what they're doing now, because we have been two of the biggest proponents of player empowerment.
Mm-hmm. This is really the good laugh at the fans, the Nets fans that were really talking that heavy talk when it came to.
I reserve my laughter for those fans who suddenly had a voice once KD and Kyrie got there. The ones who you never knew existed until KD and Kyrie got there.
The ones who didn't know the Nets played in New Jersey, you know?
Yeah, you guys who didn't know that the Nets went to the finals 2 years in a row.
Exactly.
Before KD and Kyrie got there and didn't take them there.
Well, and also, you know, let's be clear. This is why I try to tell people. Brooklyn has done this before.
When they were blew under it all
different,
up.
They were also they, remember they were under different ownership, and they tried to bring Paul Pierce, Garnett.
Paul Pierce, Garnett. They tried to take the spin cycle of the Celtics dynasty.
Yeah.
Or no, not even the dynasty. Let's correct that. They tried to take the spin cycle of a Celtics era that saw them bring back a title,
mm-hmm.
and literally repackage it in black and white.
Yeah.
I think I'm joking, but they literally repackaged it in black and white. Put it out there for everybody to say, here, you guys, we're ready to compete.
No, we're ready to compete for a championship because we are a win now organization. And they wanted to make a big splash because they had some powerful ownership.
Shout out to Mikhail Prokhorov, who was the owner. He was a big time Russian dude. I think he's like 6'7". He was an imposing mm-hmm. figure, you know, and he had a magnetism to him. He was well liked in you know that circle of ownership and you know the people that are with money. They you know he was a person that people did root for. They wanted to see him make some moves. So I just felt like
let's be clear, would also help with Jay-Z being the minority owner.
Correct.
That helped with the optics of they need to win now because. You know, Jay's about winning.
Yeah, we don't bring these guys to Brooklyn and get a stadium built and gentrify a whole entire community in Brooklyn just for y'all to go out there and go,
oh, well,
42 and 40 ain't so bad. Nah, we're not doing that. Mm-hmm. Even though that's what y'all wound up doing anyway. I can't pull the records because I don't really want to.
Exactly.
But I know that the Nets records during those seasons where they had KG and Paul Pierce, they weren't like 51 and 31. You know, they were maybe what, like mm-hmm. 46 and 36 type.
I mean, they were decent for they were always in the playoffs, but I think for most of those years they were in the playoffs and they were giving their fans that false sense of, yo, we can actually do this. Look at the names, not realizing. Yeah, those guys in their heyday or in their prime would have been an absolute monster. Right,
so, all right. When they were that team, what is that, 2012? 2013?
Yeah, 2010. In between 2010, yeah, about 2011, 2014, or something like that.
Okay. So in 2012-13, their coach was Avery Johnson briefly and PJ Carlissimo. And I don't see Kevin Garnett on this roster in 2012-13. Paul Pierce, is he there? No, Jerry Stackhouse is there. What year did Paul Pierce and was it that far along? No way, bro.
2000.
Right?
I thought it was 2010.
Okay, let's try 2013-14. Jason Kidd is the coach. Kevin Garnett is there. Year 18. Paul Pierce is there. Year 15. They went 44 and 38. I said 46 and 36. I actually gave them a better record than they had.
Mm-hmm.
The following year, They went 38-44. The year before, the one that I mentioned where Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce weren't there, they were 49-33. By the way, guess what Brooklyn's record last year was?
The same.
44-38.
Damn.
There is so much to be said about, there is so much more to winning than just having great talent on your team. And the Brooklyn Nets are a testimonial, live, real world, real time example of how things can look like a Bentley on the outside, but on the inside, you got a lemon.
You got a Chrysler 300.
And for us to even sit here and try and speculate as to how things went the way they went. Here's what I'll say, and I'll leave it. You can follow up. Kevin Durant left the moment he realized Brooklyn was no longer going to invest in Kyrie Irving long-term. So when Kyrie had to opt into that one-year deal to get his money, that's when KD knew, hey, I got to go because they're not hitched to us anymore. And since they're not hitched to us and this is the way I came, it's a us deal. I want out. All the other speculation, I don't even want to deal with. The whole, oh, KD and Kyrie still want to play with each other if it's possible. Listen, all that stuff is going to work itself out and we're going to pod about it. But the reality of it is that for all of the slander that I've pointed Kevin Durant's way for how he moves as a person, I can't, I don't even have a jab, insult, or anything to lob his way. I don't blame him for not wanting to be in a situation that he doesn't find favorable to him or likable to him or an environment that he feels comfortable in. But I'm a big believer in sometimes you gotta be willing to take out the trash in your own backyard. You're 33 years old. Your legacy has already been built as far as what you're good at doing as a basketball player. From this point out, it's about whether or not people are going to connect to you and whatever principles you can espouse while being a basketball player. And that's all I got to say. That's it.
Crazy.
What's your take on it? Do you fault Brooklyn for not giving Kyrie a long-term contract? Do you think that Brooklyn is better served or would have been better served to give him a 4 or 5 year deal or whatever. I mean, obviously giving him whatever he wants was not going to be on the table after how things played themselves out through these first 3 years. But do you think that Brooklyn essentially punted on this situation because they had to know the consequence? Yo, if we don't extend Kyrie, KD's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody in their front office had to put two and two together, right?
You would really think. And I think what they're going to try to do is, yeah, I mean, I think they look, once they realize Kyrie wasn't going to take a less than max offer, they probably knew the writing was on the wall. Or maybe they thought they could appease to Kevin Durant by just giving Kyrie a, you know, having him opt in and then trying to find a trade for him where that would help Durant. But I don't – yeah, you had to – hopefully for the – I mean, again, I'm not a Nets fan, so – and I really don't want them to win before the Knicks.
But
so,
from an educated thinker's perspective.
I think once they knew that happened, it was going to – I don't think they was going to come out. They were going to let Kevin Durant come out and say it, but they weren't going to – actively trade or be on record for trying to trade Kevin Durant until he asks for a trade. You see what I'm saying? It's different right. Where they were actively kind of letting Kyrie like
shopping
hey, you opt
and,
in. Yeah, we're not gonna shop Kevin Durant if he ain't asked out. You know what I mean? Because that wouldn't make any sense. But the fact that he did say, "Hey, I did request a trade." Now you have to move both because you can possibly get assets for both because Kyrie is technically an expiring contract for some teams.
Yeah, it was a given, but and also Kyrie is still eligible. He's still extension eligible. So he can sign an extension and be signed and traded. It's just he had to opt in to ensure that he gets a salary for the season. So he did that to get, what, 36.7 mil or something like that along those lines. Mm-hmm. And he ensured that his bag is his bag. Now, mind you, we all have to keep in mind, Kyrie is making up for a decision that he made, but it's still lost money.
Mm-hmm.
He lost about, what, 17 million, I think, in the whole fight to not get vaccinated situation that he took.
Mm-hmm.
So for him to – and I think that's probably a part of why, you know, the approach he took. Like, yo, look, man, I fought against a mandate that turned out to be invalid in the long run. People did get, unfortunately, vaccinated unnecessarily. He's not wrong. I'm not saying he's right, but he's not wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, so, yeah, definitely. I agree. It's in NBA circles also because, and I mean, again, we talked about that on the podcast about how certain players or players that were on opposite team, away teams could have unvaccinated players come into New York and play basketball. But a player that's playing on a home team, he can't, which, again, we both didn't think that made the most sense, especially, you know, it's not limited to just the locals, you know. So,
agreed.
Again, I think Kyrie's decisions, but we also don't know what, you know, obviously we know Kyrie's a fantastic player, but we don't know what some of the behind the scenes talk was going on when that type of stuff was happening. You know what I mean? Because maybe not everybody in the organization was behind Kyrie for that. Maybe they felt that, maybe they felt a different way, and they didn't. And then Kyrie's looking at it like, look, you guys, we're not on the same page. You know what? I want to shop around, try to get up out of here. And he just, you know, just for...
I think with a guy like Kyrie is pretty... I mean, he comes off, like, you know, so layered and complex because he has these thoughts that people consider him, you know, a different thinker with the whole flat earth. And then some of the approaches he takes with, like, how he interacts with the media. Like, his little exchange with Stephen A. Smith is comical. But to make a long story short, to keep it simple, what I think happened in those negotiations is, yo, I want 5 years max or close to the max to stay. 5 years. Well, Kyrie, based off of the third, we either don't want to give you the max as far as years, or we don't want to give you the max as far as money, or both.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, all right, well, if I can't get what I feel I'm rightfully deserving as far as compensation from y'all, can y'all trade me somewhere? Because that's what first came out,
mm-hmm.
is that he had these preferred trade destinations to do signing trades.
Yep.
So he was still trying to get his max. He just wanted to see if the Nets could find a team that could secure him not only the max, but the max and the bag for the length that he wanted. When Facts. None of those things came to fruition from the Nets being able to generate that for him, because I don't want to, again, like I said, I don't want to point at Kevin Durant and say he just asked out. No, he had to watch what Kyrie went through, see Kyrie say, hey, let me get out of here first, and then decide.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to paint Kevin Durant into a corner. I don't want to make him out to be a pure villain, but I don't see him that way. I don't necessarily agree with the whole entirety of the situation, but I do understand how the Kyrie impact swirling over your head, because it took about a week for all this to play out, and then he opts in, and he's still essentially on the trade market. Mm-hmm. Kyrie is still a trade chip. It's just a matter of when the Nets are going to do it. So he knows that unless there was going to be some super fence mending, it didn't make sense. So we could all just be talking about KD and Kyrie being traded and they not be moved at all, because this is a big ploy to bring everybody back to the table to talk it out the way they should or the way they can. Have we ever seen that in sports? I don't really recall. Now, I do know that there have been some acrimonious negotiation situations with a man named Kobe Bryant once. Remember he almost signed with the Clippers?
Yeah.
So... and I remember he almost asked to be traded. I think it was to Denver or something like that. There were a couple times where things weren't always rosy with the Lakers and Kobe Bryant. So it's not like situations like this don't happen. They just don't necessarily get publicized. I think the big mistake in all of this was that Kevin Durant allowed Rich Kleiman to make it a public declaration that he wanted to be traded out of Brooklyn. Even when Kyrie tried to get traded out of Cleveland back in the whole after the Golden State loss, he tried to do it privately.
Yeah, but I think in today's world of social media and the way that there's a 24-hour news cycle, I don't think things can be done necessarily in private because some of these media folks...
But it doesn't have to be outed that you asked for a trade. It could be outed that a team is trying to trade you. You get what I'm trying to say?
I see what you're saying. I think they just put it out there like, hey, it's going to be the start of free agency. Before these teams start trading pieces, we want them to know our man KD is available. So if you try to do some certain trades or certain free agent signings, be mindful that the person that you might re-sign, you might not – certain numbers you have to put into play because if you want to go after Kevin Durant, you might not be able to have – you might not be able to sign – a X or Y player to a certain dollar amount. I think that's why they did that because if they do
so they basically did it to make sure that the dollars and spaces would be available in places that would be
of course because again he has certain destinations where he wants to go and those teams have players that they're looking to sign. Now when that happens you say whoa, this is a total because not for nothing, not only is Kevin Durant one of the best players, but if you look at his contract is extremely friendly to what you're trying to do.
Yeah, you're getting a all NBA MVP candidate level player for a player who, for a cost that's below. He's cheaper than Jokic. He's cheaper than Westbrook this year. He's cheaper than a lot of the quote unquote top tier talent that just re-signed. So you make a very good valid point, and in theory, you only have to trade one really as far as salary goes. You only have to trade one really good player from this era now, and probably a mid-level player along with them to make the salary portion match.
Exactly.
Then everything else just becomes draft picks.
Yes, and that's what I'm saying. If you wait until after free agency starts, then you might eliminate some of those teams. Because I guarantee you, there are some players that are probably not signed now that might have been signed. Had Kevin Durant didn't come out and say what he said. But now you say, okay, boom, because like let's talk about the Phoenix. He talks about going to Phoenix. They got DeAndre Ayton, who is a potential person now that they can package along with some other players and draft picks to Brooklyn for Kevin Durant. Now, if another team would have signed him in free agency or something, or if Phoenix signs him to some crazy deal, now the numbers might not match up.
Now, is DeAndre restricted or unrestricted? I think he's restricted.
I thought he was restricted because I would have expected him to have already been signed if he was unrestricted. You know what I'm saying? I'd have to.
He's a restricted free agent.
Reason because remember they wanted to give him a certain deal and he felt like no, I can get more than that. So
right. He's eligible to get at the max 5 years, $177 million.
Okay. Yeah. So again, and Kevin
Durant
is going to
pay him.
Exactly. And Kevin
Durant. Kevin's got 4 years left. Yes. 200 plus.
Now, I don't know if it's 200, but either way, again, even if it is 200, I thought it was actually less than 200 because I think that's what made the deal even more friendly.
Yeah, he signed a 4-year, $194 million.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's again, that $10 million difference is a big difference when it comes time to matching salaries, you know, because it's a different type of caliber player. Because you're not gonna do a DeAndre Ayton straight up for KD, you know what I mean? But you will throw in like maybe a Cam Johnson or somebody else whose numbers will match up. Now, you know what I mean, for that difference in the bag. So it's going to be interesting because, like I said, his two choices were Miami and Phoenix. Now, Miami has, they have a couple of young players. I got to double check what I'm sure Miami has draft picks. It's Pat Riley. You know what I mean? They always stash in draft picks. So
actually, Miami's one of those sign you off the street teams. A lot of those guys that they got were guys who didn't even get drafted. Like Duncan Robinson, I think, is undrafted.
No, he's undrafted. Yeah, no.
Tyler Hero was a gift of a draft pick, but I forgot how they acquired him.
Yeah.
It's strange. I'm not sure where did Victor Oladipo resign.
He resigned with them.
He did 1 year, $1 million. 1 year, $11 million.
Yeah, with Miami, but then also Miami lost PJ Tucker, who's going to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So, yeah. again,
and he got a bag. He got a pretty decent.
Yeah, he
bag.
Got like I think he got three years, 37. Yeah, something like that. So I can't blame him for rolling out.
Listen, he won a title with Milwaukee. There's nothing else left for him to do but collect money, and I. Left in the league. So I don't want to, you know, diminish the value of a PJ Tucker. I'm just saying, for all of the struggle that he went through, because you got to remember, man, like, I don't know if people remember PJ Tucker, the guy who was the man in Texas.
Yeah.
He was the man in Texas, and everybody was like, yeah, he's going to go to the NBA. He's going to, nah. It ain't go like that for him at all. He's just now really starting to get paid. He's been appreciated for quite a few years, mm-hmm. but getting paid, I don't think he started getting paid until he left Phoenix. When he left Phoenix and started doing, you know, when started doing, went, doing those deals with Houston, he started getting, you know,
some more money. Because he played for the Raptors. About. He played for the Raptors, and I think he went to Houston right after the Raptors. I have to double check. He played. That's the thing about PJ Tucker. He's played for quite a few teams.
The only guy who's played for more teams who's active right now is our boy. Ish Smith,
yeah, who's what? I think they said if he makes the roster, it's going to be his 13th or 14th team.
Mm-hmm. And that'll be the most teams played for in NBA history.
That's crazy.
Almost shout out to Ish Smith.
Yeah, keep getting them checks, man.
Listen, keep chasing the love and proving that love and dedication to the game will keep you employed. Shout out to him. Shout out to Isaiah Thomas, who I hope we get another chance to see. Shout out to a lot of those guys who were just like, shout out to our boy. Shout out to our boy who went to Kentucky, got drafted by Sacramento, just did his 2-year suspension, and he has a chance to get himself back in the league. Oh, my
God. You talking about Tariq Evans?
Yes. Shout out to him.
Yeah, Jersey. Yeah. Shout out to Jersey.
I would say shout out to the ghost of OJ Mayo, but I don't know what he want to do with himself. I heard he's somewhere in like Puerto Rico.
I don't know if he is eligible.
He's eligible. Even. He's eligible.
Oh, he is. I didn't even know he was.
Yeah, but like he looks like OJ. When I saw footage of him, it looked like OJ Mayo ate OJ Mayo. You feel what I'm saying?
Oh wow.
Yeah, he put on he got a little Campbell's.
Yeah, but remember, he's also not in NBA circles considered young anymore.
Oh, he's past that. He's 33. So again, in the NBA where veterans who can contribute are cheap. Because you bring a guy like O.J. Mayo, not to say it's going to happen, but you could bring a guy like O.J. Mayo in on a 1-year, $2 million deal, and it's not going to be guaranteed because of where he's coming from. You let it fly. Remember, that's how JaVale McGee stuck.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to JaVale McGee. He just got a deal.
He's got a bag. That's what I'm trying to say.
He's got a bag from the Mavs.
Yeah, and he's going to play 7 seconds a game. Shout out to Dallas. They have like 19 bigs now. They went from, yo, if they get a big, to Christian Wood, Kleber, Dwight Powell.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of rim-running bigs who can set screens for Luka and get out of the way or catch a lob.
Yeah, they're going to have to figure that out because they got a lot of play. They have a lot of the same player, but they don't have any players that other teams are really going to be like, you know what, let's go get that guy. You know what I mean? Like, we just named some players that I'm like,
I think Dallas is going the LeBron model. You surround him with a bunch of shooters, which is why they weren't hedged to Brunson, which is a good segue to Rick Brunson getting that 4-year, $100 million deal from the Knicks and why he was so. I think it was two ways to it. One, you know, Jalen did not want to come back to Dallas. It's kind of clear.
No. Yeah.
And if you go back and watch what was happening during the season, you can kind of see that the writing was on the wall because he turned down an extension. I don't know if a lot of people know that, but he turned down an extension mid-season because he felt like he could make more money in free agency. Mm-hmm. And the connections that his father have to New York with the way that the Knicks run their front office, with having a former player contact, I'll call him, and Worldwide West.
Yeah, yeah.
It's easy to, quote unquote, get a reading on what your prospects may be if you want to play in New York and you know the right people to call. So I think it was just a matter of them being able to carve enough money aside to make that roster spot available and attractive enough for Jalen to come. Basketball fit, that's something that we'll talk about because we owe the Knicks an offseason podcast. So,
facts.
So we'll give the Knicks a dedicated offseason podcast. Maybe what? After Summer League starts? We'll go and give the Knicks one because I don't think that their roster is subject to much fluidity. Shout out to them for re-signing Mitchell Robinson. We're both big fans of his. And I'm happy to see him get a chance to come back because bigs who guard the rim and can go above the rim to get baskets, I think we learned in the NBA Finals how much of a commodity they are. So we forsake them all season. Oh, he can't shoot. He's on a stretch five. And then come the NBA Finals, you see a guy like Kevin Looney basically ensure that the Warriors can stay competitive out there because he's out there playing against the Celtics' litany of bigs. Speaking of the Celtics, let's talk about the Celtics' offseason moves. So the first thing we said was a glaring hole in the Celtics' way of playing basketball is that Marcus Smart is not a true playmaker. And they swung a trade and now have put Malcolm Brogdon?
Malcolm Brogdon, yeah.
And I think they got Malcolm Brogdon for the bottom half of their 18-man roster, adding Daniel Theis. So it's like Theis, Romeo Langford, Stauskas, and somebody else that got traded to
like Indiana. A second-round pick, I think.
For them to get Brogdon, do you think Brogdon pushes the needle?
Depending on what Brogdon shows up. I mean, if Brogdon's healthy, I mean, that's a consistent 17 points and about 5 assists a game. That's been a steady, doesn't really turn the ball over much, plays average defense, you know. So I think that is – and that's a consistent player who is a point guard. You're not throwing Tatum into the point for a little bit, not throwing Marcus Smart to bring the ball up in the point guard, Jaylen Brown, like – He's a point guard. Marcus Smart is great at what he does, but he's more like a utility guy.
He's a combo guard.
You know, he's a combo. So again, you got Malcolm Brogdon who is going to be able to put that pressure. And then also, if you look at it, Boston still maintains their core, but now they add another interchangeable body. Boston has done an interesting job at getting players around the same height. Like everybody's around the same height. Everybody's around in between 6'5 and 6'8. If you notice their roster, they don't have Robert Williams is about 6'8, 6'9. Al Horford,
he's got the 7 foot wingspan. So
yeah, but I'm just saying, but Jason Tatum's like 6'7, 6'8. Brown's about 6'7, 6'8. Marcus Smart's about 6'6. Brogdon's about 6'5, 6'6.
Marcus Smart is
6'3. Okay, 6'3. Okay, but Brogdon's about the same height as Marcus Smart.
He's 6'5", yeah. I agree with what you're saying. They have a bunch of switchable players. So they're going to keep pace or possibly improve on that almost record-level defense they played last year.
Yeah.
In theory, if they're healthy, they probably, unless teams figure it out, because that scheme is pretty easy to break. Golden State kind of proved it, but we'll get to that when it's time to talk. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll probably need a Celtics fan on here for them to really understand how breakable that defense is because Marcus Smart is kind of the key to how it worked and how it failed. But you get back to what you said, Boston really does have a crew of switchable guys, and they are in a position to be as competitive as they were this past season, next season. My thing is, though, I'm not sold on Brogdon. Whether in any capacity, the best Malcolm Brogdon that we ever saw, Milwaukee was okay letting go.
Yeah.
And that is because on a team like the one they were on, the Milwaukee Bucks, Malcolm Brogdon was a low turnover, assist to turnover ratio, very low, favorable in those regards, but he wasn't creating buckets. There's a difference between a playmaking point guard and a point guard. And I consider Brogdon to be a point guard.
I know, I follow 100%.
The Celtics need a guy who can pass you open. And those guys are few and far between.
Yeah, about to say, yeah, but who, but again, exactly. They're very few and far between.
I thought, and they probably, and you're probably against me on this, but he just signed with the Clippers.
What,
he signed for 2 years, 13 mil. And he doesn't and isn't likely to play 48 minutes a game, and the Celtics wouldn't have to play him that long. He's a creator. He's a shot creator for other people. He passes guys open. John Wall does that. With his penetration and ability to get to the back. Because remember, even now with one leg, he still was giving you 20 and 6. And getting to the basket, not at will, but getting to the basket with very little difficulty.
On a bad switching team.
Right. So, where he was the only clear offensive threat, him and Christian Wood, and he wasn't passing to Christian Wood. So, what do you have there? I think they didn't get that guy, and they probably felt at his age, because, you know, John Wall's 31, going on 32. He's probably too old to mesh with that core. But at the same time, you got Al Horford there. So it's like, why not? I don't think Brogdon is going to push them over. And from what I'm hearing, Brogdon is slated to be a sixth man, not even a starter. So they're going to keep the starting core intact. And Brogdon's going to be this utility sixth man guy, him and Derek White. So you know, you're going to have an all light skin backcourt coming off the bench.
Either that or White is not coming back. Because again, he's almost the same play. He's just probably more efficient.
Brogdon's a much better shooter. Much better.
No,
shooter.
But what I'm saying is, that's the same type of play.
Yeah, interchangeable. Agreed.
So that I don't know. It'll be very interesting to see what happens there. But real quick. Well, back to the Knicks situation with Zion signing the rookie max and Ja Morant signing the rookie max. What do you think the Knicks do with RJ Barrett? Now, granted, RJ Barrett is not eligible to get the super max the same as Zion and Ja Morant because he has not been an NBA All-Star yet. But do you feel like the Knicks have to sign him to a max deal under the structure, or do you feel like the Knicks are going to try to do something that is going to make maybe RJ and his team want to look at other options?
I would give RJ a bet on himself 4-year deal with a player option.
So basically, the max is normally what, 5 years at 180 or whatever that threshold is. Let's so you wouldn't give him
say the max is 5 and 2.
Okay, so you're saying you wouldn't give him even the fifth year. You would just give him 4 and 1.
I would give him 5. I would give him 5, 168 with that fifth year player option.
Mm-hmm.
So you're still at that salary number at or around those other 4 years average to, but if you feel like you warrant a bigger salary, you can decline your player option, akin to what Kyrie did.
Yeah. No. And also, he would have to make an all-star team or two within, you know, the next step. You know what I mean? Because that's that Derrick Rose rule.
Mm-hmm. Right. To keep a guy home.
Yeah.
Agreed. I would give RJ 4 with a player option for the fifth. And I would not be giving him max salary for his tier. No. I would probably want to pay him along the lines of better than what Jalen got, because you probably have to based on the salary scale. Because Jalen's 25 mil a year now.
Yeah.
25 times 4 is 100. So he's a $25 million a year player.
His contract says, yeah.
Right. You'd be hard pressed to pay RJ Barrett less than that.
No,
so
yeah.
If you do 4 years at 25, that's 100 mil. If you do 4 years at 40 mil, that's 160.
60. Yeah.
If you do 4 years at 30, that's 120.
So you're gonna do
You give them four at 120 with a player option in that fifth year for another 33. You know that number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So that now, come fifth year, we as a franchise and you as a player, we know where you stand. We either mm-hmm. have got to negotiate because you're not going to opt into that contract, and we're probably going to give ourselves an extension window in that option year to re-sign you and give you a better number. Plus, your contract language is probably going to allow you to be eligible for a bigger extension. But mm-hmm. if we front-load you that money, if the Knicks front-load that money, man, that would be a mistake. Because mm-hmm. RJ Barrett is a good young player, but his ceiling doesn't elevate them so far that they don't need salary cap room to go and get other guys.
No, absolutely.
The Knicks need to do whatever they can to keep rotating their flexibility. So you signed Kemba, you brought in Fournier, both mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
You can't jettison Fournier too fast. You're probably stuck with him again
because you lowered the value. Yeah, because unfortunately the Knicks lowered the value of Fournier and Randle by letting them overextend them playing this past season. Tibbs running these guys to 37 minutes a game, letting these guys.
I don't know. I stopped watching because I've been told you what Tibbs is going to do to players. Like,
yeah.
And it's criminal. Get that. It's criminal. I mean, he's literally out there like, I don't want to use like derogatory terms, but you know, you out there, you got them out in the cotton field, bro. They don't get no water. They don't get no shade.
Which is weird because you have a yada young players on that team who you have to figure roles for, because if the other teams don't see the value, if you don't play them to where other teams see value, now that they're not tradable pieces, because people will be like, well, they ain't doing nothing with them, like what they did with Kevin Knox. Like, he was not – I mean, they was able to get Cam Reddish out of it, and who knows what's going to happen with Cam Reddish. But if you don't play guys, these young pieces, enough, or keep them – play them just enough to where there is still – teams are still intrigued by them, you lose value. These guys will lose value because the NBA is getting younger and younger. So if they don't feel like you can live up to that potential, you're gone. But – again, we'll see what happens with the Knicks. I think they'll have to give RJ the money because that. But I think RJ is caught in a rock and a hard place because the allure and the potential of Zion and the reality of how good Ja is, knowing that he was drafted as the third guy, that makes you wonder he's going to have to. I mean, he's always going to be linked to them. You know what I mean? So he's got to step up.
Yeah, just like Trae Young is linked to Luka, but he got his bag because Trae Young was able to ascend for the franchise that drafted him and take them somewhere they needed to go. Now, mm-hmm. granted, again, when we finally do talk about the Knicks and I get to speak on it, it's going to sound like I don't like left-handed people. Ladies and gentlemen, attend and listen to us. I am left-handed. C. Grant can vouch for that. I write with my left hand. I only play basketball with my right hand. And that was because when I was a kid, I got hurt and my left arm got hurt. So a guy watching me sit on the court and mope, and he said, "Why are you crying?" I said, "Because I can't play." He says, "Well, why can't you play?" I said, "Because my arm is broken." He said, "Well, you know, you have two arms, right?" Now here I am, Smart Alex, being made out to be the dumbest kid to ever be at a basketball court, to have somebody have to tell me that I have two arms. So I began using my right arm. That became my shooting arm. The Knicks have now collected three guys who are going to start who are all left-handed.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait.
Which it's amazing how teams start predominantly right-handed players and nobody says that. But the fact that Knicks start lefties, because there's lefties are few and far in between, that's going to be a topic of discussion.
It's going to be a topic of discussion because everybody's going to pull a shot chart, which they did on Julius,
mm-hmm.
and indicted his whole entire game.
Yeah.
And if the same can't be said, the difference with Jalen is that the way he plays in the paint and the fact that he's got amazing post control for a guard, he's going to be able to turn and get shots going over his left and right shoulder. Maybe he'll actually teach that to Julius Randle, and he fixes a problem. RJ Barrett's so young that he can kind of like barrel chest running hard to his left hand and get to the rim still. He's got maybe a couple more years where he can still do that. He's going to need to get some crafty and deception, probably add a right-hand floater if he wants to ever be a truly balanced player. But as of right now, if I'm guarding those guys, like if I'm standing on – if I'm guarding them, I know that all we got to do is play D on the right-hand side of the court because they're all lefty. They're all lefty. If somebody takes a shot on the left-hand side of the court, it's going to be one of the other two players on the team. And who's that going to be? Mitchell Robinson and what, maybe Fournier? Come on, man. And I'm not saying that to say like that means the Knicks are going to be predictable. It's just – it's a curious Knicks offseason as always. I want to let more play out. But, you know, they've got some explaining to do, like a lot of these other franchises too. But they definitely – now, mind you, we didn't really get to everything. We didn't get to what has happened in Atlanta with their situation. DeJounte Murray has been traded from the Spurs to Atlanta to give Trae Young a defensive backcourt partner, which was much more needed than him having a backcourt partner that could shoot.
Yeah.
So Atlanta did finally capitulate and say, hey, we know that if we have Trae Young out here, we need four other defenders. So you go out and get a premier perimeter defender who's only improved every season he's been in the NBA?
Yeah.
Now, is he big? No, but the NBA has proven that big guards don't really matter if you've got wingspan. Donovan Mitchell 6'1" with a 6'10" wingspan. He's one of the best. He's one of the best guards in the league. DeJounte Murray. What is he? 6'3"? But he's got like a 6'7" wingspan, so he's capable of guarding these bigger guards. So you can run these smaller lineups in height because these guys can athletically compete. And what that gives you an opportunity to do is to hide Trae Young, because what did the Golden State Warriors prove? We can hide Steph Curry and win titles. So now every team is willing to say, all right, well, if we got one guy who can't guard on the perimeter and the other guys can, we can build a defense that allows us to hide that guy. So Atlanta has jumped in on that. They also were able to get from underneath the Danilo Gallinari contract. And isn't Danilo going to Boston?
Yeah. Again, another similar player, the same height.
Well, I mean, he's Danilo, like 6'10". Danilo's.
But he's like Al Horford, the same type of height.
Same type of height, but he's a way different. His scoring realm is a different area of the court. He's one of the better long-range shooters at his height. And he has been since coming into the league. I was always mad when he got moved from the Knicks. I liked him, man. But then he went to Denver and did numbers, too. So, at the end of the day, you know.
He's part of the Melo trade, so.
Yeah. I don't have anything against him. I think Gallinari is always good, but he just, you know, he has injury issues. So that's kind of what has held him back from, I mean, he's always a rotation player. So star, you would never throw that at him. I'm trying to think who else didn't we talk about that we could just throw out there real quick. I don't want to comment on the Miles Bridges situation. I hope that plays out in a positive way for all parties involved, primarily for, you know, the young lady.
Yeah.
I hope that justice is served in that situation for all parties involved, whether that be to the detriment of another person. I don't want that either, but I'm very adamant about the idea that we have to become a more nonviolent society, especially when it comes to our interpersonal relationships with our wives and the women in this world. You know, we have so much going on. The last thing we need to do is continue to make our women feel less protected than they already do. I'm looking at these trades. I mean, I don't really want to discuss Christian Wood pushing the Dallas needle because Dallas played in the Western Conference Finals. So they're on the books to get
back. And we talked about that trade at the last
the finals. I do want to touch on the Clippers. Do you see them fully healthy, top four in the West, as they're currently constructed? Batum came back.
No.
They added no.
No, top four: Golden State, Memphis. I think is going to be better.
Okay.
Let me see. Who else is it? Denver. If they come back healthy, yeah, they could be a top four team. So yeah, the Clippers could be right there because Clippers finished the season what, top six?
They were a seventh seed, and
yeah. So yeah, I could see them top four. I could see them top Phoenix. So it could be Phoenix. It could be Golden State.
Minus Kevin Durant right now, Phoenix currently constructed still top four in the West. I agree.
No, they were the number one seed. This past season, they didn't have Kevin Durant.
Yeah, but we know that number one seed, the helium is out of the balloon.
No, but what I'm saying is that I don't see them going from the number one seed to the number eighth seed.
Right, or five.
I'm saying
in the top four. Right. So that's why when I asked you, I was curious to see who.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to figure in my mind. Who could be top four that would keep Clippers out of that top? Out of that top four position. So that's what I was trying to figure out because you said if healthy.
So we got Golden State.
Phoenix. I can see Memphis. And maybe.
Memphis
was two. Yeah, there were two. And maybe Denver. But
no, Memphis had to be the three seed. Because
I thought there were two and Golden State was the three seed.
Golden, maybe. But I thought game seven was in.
They didn't go to game seven. They went to game six with Memphis.
But game six was in Memphis, though, wasn't it?
I thought it was Golden State.
Regardless.
Either way.
So who do you have as the possible fourth best team over the Clippers? Denver?
I said it's possible. It's possible.
I feel like Denver is a push because Denver was one of six seed. You're right. They were the sixth seed because Golden State played 3-6. So mm-hmm. Denver was six. Golden State was three. So yeah, the Grizzlies were the two seed. But to wrap it up, I'm hard pressed to put because Denver was six, Clippers were seven. I feel like fully healthy, the Kawhi Leonard return factor versus getting back Michael Porter Jr. and Jamal Murray doesn't equate. Not to the same level of improvement. I think those guys do make you better. They probably do push hard for that top five portion of the conference. But again, you know what? I'm going to hedge. Because what does healthy Kawhi mean in 2022?
Well, and that's my biggest thing. Is he's going to be
healthy Kawhi could be 57 games. Healthy Kawhi could be 62 games. But the likelihood of him lacing up for 82?
No.
He don't even jump high in his commercials.
Yes. Heck, I haven't even seen a Kawhi commercial recently.
Oh, it's a Kawhi commercial. There's a New Balance commercial. They're on some random outdoor basketball court, him and some white dude playing one-on-one. Yeah, doing a lot of fundamental shuttle drills. So, you know, shout out to that whole situation. It's a real 1970s vibe to it. But we'll continue to reconnect as the offseason develops. Summer League has begun. I think there were two games mm-hmm. the night before. Obviously, the Lakers were a big part of the Summer League. They signed Scottie Pippen's son. Mm-hmm. And he's on there. He got a two-way deal. The Lakers have signed a bunch of, you know, jump high but never done anything in the league just yet guys to their roster. We'll explore that the next time we link up or, you know, probably after mm-hmm. because I definitely want to give the Knicks that, you know, attention, you know, finally daddy spending time with me that they need. You know, we need to have a conversation with them and with some of these other franchises because I'm not really happy with what Minnesota did. But I've left them alone for this podcast so that they can get the talking to that they deserve because I think that if Carl Anthony Towns signed off on that, we got some explaining to do. But on that note, we're going to wrap this episode of Views from the Clutch up. As always, we'd like to say thank you to our supporters, listeners, and subscribers. If you'd like to join us, you can do so by following us on any of the podcasting platforms we're hosted on. You can find us on social media at Views from the Clutch on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. You can reach us directly at viewsfromtheclutch@gmail.com. And on that note, we say peace.
Peace.